From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, as you know, I'm no dummy.
I do know that, and I better say that.
But I have a dummy load, or a dummy antenna, yeah, or any other number of names. My dummy load actually is only rated for about, I think it's somewhere in the order of 50 watts. It's something about the size of my hand, and I use it for all sorts of things. I would hate to be without it. So I thought, why don't we talk about dummy loads? Well, let's start for hams who have no idea what we're talking about, which may be many. What is a dummy load, Joel?
Okay, a dummy load, it is a very simple concept. It's basically a power resistor that has an impedance of about typically 50 ohms to work with our usual coax systems. And it's 50 ohms resistive at DC and at RF, which is not as easy to do as it used to be. So what it does is it acts like the antenna. The transmitter can put power into it just as if it were putting power into a 50 ohm antenna system, but the signal doesn't go anyplace as a radio signal. It just generates heat in the resistor, which can get quite hot.
And eventually,
if you put 100 watts into your 50 ohm dummy load for too long, you'll find it not only emits heat, it also emits smoke. And after a while, it probably will not act like a dummy load anymore. But usually you can get away with it because the heat within a resistor is kind of a long term effect. And if you're using, say, single sideband or CW and you're on and off half the time, it's really the average power that you're concerned about, as long as you don't keep the key down for too long or use it to test a radio teletype signal that's on full time the whole time. Mm-hmm. So for single sideband, a 50 watt dummy load would probably handle a 100 watt transmitter just fine.
But tell them why they should even invest in a dummy load. What's the point? Why have it?
Well, the point is that every transmitter needs testing, and you need a chance to set things up to make it operate properly, adjust your audio controls and anything else that needs to be adjusted. And you need to do some of that with it on the air, just as if you were going to use it. And if you hook it onto your antenna while you're playing around with your audio controls, you're potentially interfering with other signals. You know, mm-hmm, you may not even hear them, but they can hear you.
Yes.
Right, depending on the propagation conditions. And it's generally bad practice to do that. You want to be able to adjust your transmitter without it interfering with other people. You also don't have to worry about getting trapped listening to a conversation that's happening, because you aren't receiving signals either, usually with a dummy load, although they're often a little in there.
Oh yeah.
So it's a very good idea to do that, and it gives you a known load that you can use as a reference, and you can find out what all the measurements parameters are in the transmitter, the current and the voltages everywhere that you have access to, and write them down, and you know what it's supposed to be doing. And you can compare that to what happens when you put your antenna on.
So that would make it a good tool for troubleshooting, really.
Absolutely, because you don't have to worry about, you know, if you're adjusting your compression or something, or your audio gain, microphone gain, and you go too far, you end up distorting and putting out a very wide signal. Well, while you're making those adjustments, if you're in the dummy load, it will not interfere with people on other channels, not only the channel you're on, but if you had an antenna on there, you might have a very wide band signal, and you might hear from an observer or even the FCC if there were a complaint about spurious signals coming from your transmitter. So you can get everything set up properly without having it put a signal out on the air. At least that's the idea. Now, I have to point out, all dummy loads radiate a little bit, and probably we've all made a contact or two from our dummy load. I don't know if you have, but it happens. In fact, I used to have a sked with an old friend, and I was helping him get his code proficiency up, and I was getting the radio set up ahead of time, and I heard a weak signal on frequency, and I listened carefully, and son of a gun, if it wasn't my friend 30 miles away practicing what he was going to send me into his dummy load. So I already knew what the answer was before he asked the question. But anyway, so there's a little bit of signal that gets out there, yeah, but it's usually not enough to be a problem. Now, what's in a dummy load is, you know, that it's basically a resistor. I've actually made very nice low power 20 watt dummy loads out of a bunch of 2 watt carbon resistors in parallel and a connection arrangement that kept the inductance low and so forth. And carbon resistors are resistive except for the leads, which provide a little bit of inductance over a wide frequency range. Current resistor types typically are not as good in that regard. They're fine as resistors for low-frequency circuits, but which is what they're designed for. But they're made with little coil structures of carbon film that's been cut along a helix kind of structure, so they actually act like an inductor. Now, if you put an inductance in series with your resistor, it no longer looks like a resistor at high frequencies, and that can be a little bit of a problem if you wanted to make a dummy load. But there are special resistors that are either a different kind of structure that don't have that. I'm aware of some recently available called Cadec resistors. It's a brand, I think. But they actually are resistive well into the high frequency range and maybe even into VHF. They typically are compact and they operate against a heat sink usually. And you're seeing more and more dummy loads are made with those. But you can actually buy those separately and slap them on a heat sink properly and make your own. And they're not terribly expensive. Carbon resistors, if you find them, can also be used, but they don't typically show up any higher power ratings than about 2 watts, and they haven't been made that way for years, so you find them at flea markets and stuff. But if you want a 100-watt dummy load, that takes 52-watt resistors and a lot of space in between, and it's hard to make that come out the way you want. But my 20-watt, it worked quite well. That was something I got from an old ARL VHF manual that they showed how to do that. The other thing that you find is there are special wire-wound resistors that are wound in such a way that the inductance tends to cancel out, and they are perhaps not quite as flat over frequency as the Cadex, but they are adequately flat. They are available in fairly high power versions, but the power rating can be improved by immersing them in oil. And for a long time, the Heath company made a Cantenna, which I happen to have
one
of.
Oh, the Cantenna, yes.
A gallon paint jug.
I was wondering when you were going to get to that.
Well, I think it's important to mention because they're kind of clever. They were very relatively inexpensive at the time, $29, which was real money back then. But but I have one, and I bought it new. The thing you have to watch out for if you buy one used, they're always some at a flea market, is the people tended to use transformer oil in them, and some of the early transformer oils had PCB contamination in them by design. You have to be very careful with that. So if you get one, you don't know what's in it, and it seems to be dry on the outside, and it's heavy enough to be wet on the inside. If you don't open it up, you're probably okay. But if you can find out what's in it, it's even better. I used mineral oil from the drugstore.
That's what I used.
And other than getting a strange look when you ask for a gallon of it at the drugstore and sympathetic looks from the druggist and so forth.
Well, I had to buy a bunch of small bottles. Yeah. They didn't have a gallon.
No,
that's and
right.
I walked up to the cashier with all these small bottles of mineral oil. Yes, I got a suspicious look, to say the least.
He really thought we were stuck up.
Yeah.
But anyway, that works. Then actually the rating has to be derated a little bit for that compared to transformer oil. But
yes.
I've been using it for years, the same stuff. I checked after 20 years, and it was still almost all the way to the top. So it still works. So you can find these around, and there are actually a couple people that actually make them still, and they're still available either with or without the oil. And you can go to your drugstore and get the same looks if you want to get it without, and then they don't have to pay for the shipping the oil.
Now, MFJ... for example, I know that they still manufacture dummy loads, and some of those are air-cooled. Actually, I'm thinking of one that has a fan in it, so I know that those are also available. When you look out on eBay, you see all sorts of dummy loads of various sizes. Some are military, industrial. Many of them are just air-cooled. They have gigantic fins on them, and any of those would be fine.
Absolutely. I bought one of those not too long ago for my downstairs station. It's very reasonable, and it seems to work just fine. And it's rated up into, I don't know, 500 megahertz or something, has an end connector on it. And it's, you know, heavy and clunky, but it works, and it solved my problem. The ones that are air-cooled, some of those are these new Cadec resistors in them, have them as the basis of them. And some have other kinds of resistors that are fan-cooled or heat-sink-cooled or a combination. And any of these can work fine. It's good to have one. In fact, there's another thing you can do with them, by the way, that's kind of handy, is if you have an SWR meter and you're wondering about its calibration, if you put a 50-ohm dummy load on it, it should show an SWR of 1:1.
That's right.
If you happen to have two dummy loads and you put them together with a T-connector and a coax cable, to 50-ohm coax cable to each one, it should have an impedance of 25 ohms at the junction. And if you have a very short length or no length at all of cable from there to your Well, no matter what it is, it should be a 2-to-1 SWR. The impedance will actually vary depending on the length of the cable, but it should be a 2-to-1. So that's another test of your SWR meter, and that's good to have a couple of measurement points.
Well, my little dummy load has been put to use in a troubleshooting application where I had an antenna that was misbehaving, and I took the dummy load right out to the feed point of the antenna, disconnected the coaxial cable, connected the dummy load, and then I would go back to the station and see what I would see on the SWR meter. If I was getting a nice 1-to-1 SWR or something reasonably close to it, then I knew the problem was the antenna indeed. If not, then I would have suspected the coax or whatever.
Absolutely. And another thing you can do, the same setup, if you put your power meter out at the dummy load and you either have somebody watch it or somebody push the key down from the station while you're out there, you can actually measure the loss in your cable that way.
Oh, I've done that, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's another thing you can do. So it's a very handy instrument to have. It doesn't take up much space. You don't have to feed it very often. It just sits there until you need it, and you will be happy you have it. Another thing I do in my station, my antenna tuner automatically switches to a particular antenna when it's powered off. I keep a dummy load on that, so if I don't happen to catch a report of a forecast of thunderstorms and disconnect my antennas, at least the radio is connected through the tuner to a dummy load and not to one of my antennas, which is not perfect, but it's better than having it connected to the antenna.
Oh, yeah. And lest anyone think that dummy loads are just a ham application, when I used to work at Broadcast Electronics, we manufactured, in some cases, 50,000-watt transmitters, and we had a giant dummy load that was about 6 feet tall, had water circulating through it, and we would dump the entire 50,000-watt output of one of those transmitters into that dummy load. And boy, let me tell you, that thing would get quite warm.
I was going to say, it'd be good in the winter.
Yes. So you're not going to warm your shack with a dummy load, let's hope, but they're certainly handy. And as inexpensive and readily available as they are, it's something that probably everybody should have.
Yep. I think that's absolutely true. And oh, another thing occurs to me. You know, obviously you don't need an antenna tuner to drive a 50-ohm load.
No.
But if you want to check your antenna tuner, make sure it works, or to get a preliminary tuning arrangement on it, you can put the dummy load on the output of your antenna tuner, and it's not smart enough to know that it's a 50-ohm load. You still can go through the tuning steps just as you would with any other antenna.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
And once you've tuned it, it will give you a starting point for a real antenna that has a different impedance. So, you know, it's on the same frequency and so forth. So it can be used to check out an antenna tuner as well.
That's an excellent application. Well, Joel, let's take a break, and then we'll reach into the mailbag when we come back.
All right.
Ever talk to a salesperson who didn't know the difference between a rotator and a rotary phone, or a Yagi and a yo-yo, or a Balin and a ballerina? You'll never have that problem with DX Engineering. When you call us, you'll talk directly with knowledgeable amateur radio experts, people who speak your language. When you contact DX Engineering, you're dealing with operators who are as passionate about the hobby as you are. This means better service, expert technical advice, and a commitment to your complete satisfaction, even long after your purchase has been made. Whether you're newly licensed or a longtime operator, you'll always find a friendly ham who understands exactly what you need on the other end of the line. Plus, you'll find a huge selection of amateur radio equipment, get the fastest shipping in the ham universe, and shipping is free on most orders over $99. Let's talk about your station. Visit us at dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
All right, and we are back with a question, Joel. This one's right from W4EMM, and he's asking, I uncovered a Balin that I used several years ago, but I can't remember if it's a 4-to-1 or a 1-to-1, and the label is no longer readable. What'd be the best way to determine its characteristics? That's a good point, because I've done the same thing. I run into a Balin. I have no idea what its value is.
Well, that's that does happen with lots of things.
Yeah.
Tubes also. You
tubes
look at,
too, yes.
You can't see what
yes
they are. We don't do that as much as we used to. But they're getting harder and harder to read for two reasons. Anyway, the usual Balins that you find are one of a couple of different transformation ratios. Of course, there are 1-to-1 Balins, which are designed to match 50 ohms to 50 ohms, to match a 50-ohm balanced antenna, such as a dipole, to 50-ohm unbalanced system such as coaxial cable. Or a 4-to-1 is, I think, the next most common one, and that's designed to match a 200-ohm balanced load to a 50-ohm coaxial system. A lot of people say, well, why would you do 200 ohms? But there's a couple reasons. We'll get to that in a minute. But the best way to do this, in my opinion, is to take that dummy load we were just talking about. So here's another application of a dummy load. Now, even though it's the dummy load is probably set up to attach via a coax cable, the balun doesn't really care if something that's right there next to it is balanced or not. So if you just have a coax adapter that adapts a 50-ohm coax connector to a pair of clip leads, you can clip that onto the balanced side and measure the SWR on the unbalanced side. And if the SWR is 1-to-1, that means it, the 50-ohm dummy load impedance was transformed through a ratio of 1-to-1, and it's 50 ohms on the other side, so you have a 1-to-1 balun. On the other hand, if it's a 4-to-1 balun, you'll see a 4-to-1 SWR because it'll transform the 50 ohms to about 12.5 ohms. It's not going to be exactly perfect,
no,
but it should be close to that because the balun is really designed to transform 200 ohms to 50 ohms, not 50 ohms to 12.5.
No.
But it should give you a measurement that's relatively close to 4-to-1, and that should tell you which it is if it's one of those two. Now, the little bit of risk here because there are other balun impedances you can run into. And most baluns transform to higher impedances, but there are occasionally baluns that transform to lower impedance ratios, such as are used for driving a driven element of a Yagi, for example. So you could conceivably have, instead of a 4-to-1, you could have a 1-to-4.
Oh.
And if you had a 1-to-4 and you did that same experiment, you'd get the same 4-to-1 SWR. So you couldn't tell the difference between those two if you were just looking at SWR. So that's just a cautionary tale. Now, chances are those are not anywhere near as common. Now, if you were measuring the SWR with an antenna analyzer instead of, say, with your radio, you should be able to read the actual impedance, and that should tell you what you've got. But I think if it's a 1-to-1 or a 4-to-1 of the normal type, even if you have to use your transmitter to test it with to measure the SWR, if you don't use too much power, you won't get into too much trouble even at 4-to-1 SWR if you, you know, run 25 watts. Enough to see what the SWR meter is showing, but not enough to stress the transmitter out. But if you go beyond that, if you went to a 9-to-1 or a 12-to-1, which are designed for rhombic antenna, 600-ohm rhombic antenna systems, for example, then you're starting to push the envelope on what you can do with your transmitter without your transmitter going a little bit crazy, folding back power and shutting the transmitter down or going into alarm or whatever your transmitter happens to do. But for a 4-to-1 or a 1-to-1, I think you're pretty safe in any of those cases by just using your transmitter if you don't have an antenna analyzer. But the antenna analyzer is the best way to do it. Now, the other parameter that's a little harder to tell is the power handling capability. You
yes.
didn't mention that, but different baluns have different ratings for how much power they can handle. And my only suggestion to that is just try it with your transmitter. And into a dummy load would be fine too, or particularly if it's a 1-to-1. Try it for a while with your normal operating conditions and whatever kind of modulation you use, sideband or CW or radio teletype, whatever. After 10 minutes, put your hand on, with the key up, put your hand on the, put your hand on the balun. And if it's getting warm, you're probably pushing it too hard. Ferrite materials are not good at dissipating heat, and if they get too hot, they will, instead of just getting hotter and hotter, they will get hot for a while, and then they will break into lots of little pieces and not work as balanced anymore.
And do it spectacularly in some cases.
Indeed. So you can kind of get an idea. If you don't feel any heat at all, you're in good shape, and the amount of heat you get may partly depend on how close you are operating the balun to its design impedance. But in any event, if a balun's getting hot, I would suggest not using it anymore.
That's a good point. Thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.